We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of the Eurostep podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Network. This is the end of the West Coast road trip edition of the Eurostep. The Bucks return home to Milwaukee today after a 2-2 split out west. 3-2 if you include the win over the Bulls for the road trip in total. But I'm Kane Pittman and I'm joined by the man on the herd beat, as always, Ty Windish. What's up, man?
You know, the world is over now because the Bucks lost back-to-back games and they lost twice to the same team. So I think the meteors are coming any day. I think the end times are here. So, you know, I'm just trying to live my best life over these last few days, honestly.
It was fun while it lasted. And, you know, like you said, I think now they've lost back-to-back games and same old Bucks, huh?
Yeah, they're right back to their old loser ways. It's you hate to see it.
You do hate to see it. But the Bucks did lose back-to-back games for the first time in the season. It took until March 4 for this to happen, which is just, I mean, it's just ridiculous when you really think about that. It was something that we've all been following and tracking through the year and how savage their response has been to a loss or a team that's beat them last time. But they get the double whammy last night. They lose to the Phoenix Suns, who coming into the night had the worst record in the NBA. The Bucks obviously had the best record in the NBA. The Bucks lose to the Suns 114-105. And not only do they lose back-to-back games, but they lose to the Suns for the second time, and the worst team in the NBA sweeps the Bucks.
It's just inexplicable. It's honestly, I think it's funny. I think there are people. I feel like I've seen more people on my timeline getting worked up about people getting worked up than actual people getting worked up in the first place. I haven't seen too much like calamity talk. I'm sure it's out there somewhere, but I don't know. It's hard for me to care that much about the randomness of two regular season games against Phoenix that I'm sure the Bucks probably erroneously tried to sleep through. And, I mean, give credit where it's due. DeAndre Ayton and sort of Rashawn Holmes, but mostly DeAndre Ayton, did a great job defensively on Giannis. And I think other teams would be smart to try to emulate that game plan of having an athletic big cover him rather than a more perimeter-oriented player.
Yeah, I think that, you know, for sure, Ayton did a superb job defensively. Offensively, he caused some problems as well. That was the first time. Oh, I seen him live play when they were in Milwaukee, but last night where we were sitting at the game, we were basically on the floor that like center court, so you really get a better appreciation for how big these guys are. And DeAndre Ayton, I tell you, for a rookie, he is mature physically and he's ready to go. And he's hard to move. And I thought that he was super impressive. But the Suns as a whole, I think that it's easy to look past that team and you know how bad they have been through the year, only 13 wins coming in. But they've got some guys that on their night can have a big game. And Kelly Oubre had 27 points, hit a really big three down the stretch. Ayton, we already spoke about, he had 19 and 12. And Devin Booker hit some tough shots. He, you know, 8 for 18 overall, but he did what he did and hit some big shots, and particularly late. And there was two possessions there in the fourth quarter where Bledsoe was doing such a great job of getting over the screens, as he does so well, and forcing Booker into tough shots. But you know, Booker was able to get Brogdon on him on a couple of possessions, which I'm not sure why that happened or how that happened, if that was a complete breakdown. But Brogdon didn't have the ability to get around the Ayton screen, and it just freed up Booker for one big three in particular, and then on the other one, he got into pick and roll with Ayton, and he scored that really tough bucket off Giannis to almost seal the game. So, look, I think that, you know, like I said, this Suns team play with great energy. They're young. They've got a lot of athletes, and despite their record, at the end of a really really tough road trip like that for the Bucks, third game in four nights, it's kind of a tough opposition to come up against. And, you know, that might be weird to say, but, you know, they just, again, just ran out of gas late, the same as they did in Utah.
Yeah, I think those things kind of just happen. Like you mentioned, you know, third game in four nights. And, you know, this isn't the only young team we've seen kind of play better recently. Like the Bulls have done this too after getting Otto Porter. The Suns got Oubre. And they didn't get... You know, they haven't gotten good at all. They didn't get better than abysmal right after getting Oubre. But I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of times these teams are bad all year, and then either they get a new player or something clicks, or they just plain and simple get sick and tired of losing, and all of a sudden they're not just that easy team to beat. And especially, I think bad teams, especially later in the year, pose a challenge because, you know, teams get a little worn out, the good teams. The bad teams are typically young, which means they oftentimes have a little more left in the tank. I think that was pretty evident in the Suns-Bucks game. I mean, there's a lot of young guys on that team, and they just kept running. And, you know, no game is easy any night, really, in the NBA. So, I mean, this was bound to happen.
Yeah, look, I just, again, like when you, like, and the Bucks players actually spoke about this when we asked them about this after the game. They were disappointed that they didn't, you know, keep this streak rolling of not losing back-to-back games. And Brook Lopez actually sort of mentioned that. He said, we got to the point where we did think we could get through the whole season without losing back-to-back games. And, you know, it is frustrating that we lost. But the one thing I'll say about the Bucks team was that they were making no excuses for the loss. Malcolm Brogdon in particular just straight up said that they didn't respect the opposition and they didn't come ready to play. And look, I can't question Brogdon telling me that. If that's what he's saying, then you take that on face value. But again, you know, when you look at the shooting numbers for a lot of these guys, Chris Middleton could not make anything. He's one for 13 on the night. Lopez much the same, 3 for 11. Bledsoe 5 for 15. Mirotić had his worst game in Milwaukee, 3 for 14. So those four guys, basically your four primary scorers outside of Giannis, Brogdon's obviously in there as well, but those four guys shoot 6 for 32 from three and 12 for 53 from the field. So, look, they didn't want to, and I asked everyone, and I just wanted to see, because you could tell watching these guys that they looked tired. There was uncharacteristic turnovers. There were steps slow everywhere. The Suns had 10 block shots. The Bucks just didn't have that usual explosiveness that they did get into the rack. So they wouldn't admit that the fatigue was an issue. But when you look at those numbers for all those guys that are jump shooting players, that would explain that there was probably some fatigue there. And that's not something we've seen a lot in terms of that many guys being off on one night. That's what's been a strong point for the Bucks, is that if one or two guys are off, then two or three of the other guys pitch in and carry the water for the team. But that didn't happen last night. They were all off, and they just couldn't overcome that.
No, and just one last thing here on the not losing back-to-back games. So the Warriors managed to do it in 2015-16, although they did lose more than two back-to-back games in the finals that year, notably. Yeah. But the Chicago Bulls team that won 72 games, they only made it till early February without losing back-to-back games. They did that before the All-Star break. So you can be a really, really great team and happen to drop back-to-back games. It happens. Funny enough, the Bulls' second loss, their first back-to-back loss that year, the second game, was against the Phoenix Suns. There's a stat.
The Suns. That's just what they do.
They were a little better then, but they were still under 500. It happens. People lose to the Suns.
No, one thing that I always point out when, I know that the Bucks lost to the Suns earlier in the season, and, at that point in time, the Bucks were sort of going through a win-loss stretch, but there were some Bucks fans that were really upset about that, and they thought that the Bucks, obviously didn't play up to their capabilities that night. But, this is what happens in the NBA. Sometimes bad teams beat good teams. And I always point to the Bucks beating the Warriors and breaking the streak. The Bucks were a bad team.
Yeah.
And they beat that Warriors team that won 73 games. So, it's just one of those things that happens in the NBA. And in terms of, some more of those shooting numbers. So the Bucks shoot 36% from the field. It's only the third time this season that they've shot under 37% from the field. The other two games were that disaster in Miami where they had the 8-point first quarter. And the other one was against the Magic just before the All-Star break where Orlando blew them out. So, that's a real anomaly for this team to have numbers that bad. And, at this point, they shoot under 37%. They're 0-3. So, look, when you look at the box score and really analyze the game, you have to say that perhaps in the end, it could have been worse in terms of the overall margin. Also, for Chris Middleton, 1-for-13. I was curious because we know that he's a controversial figure with Bucks fans at the moment, and not so much about what he's doing right now, but what's going to happen later in the year. But we've discussed that endlessly, so there's no point getting into that. But for Middleton, 1-for-13 last night. It's only the second time in his career that he's had at least 10 field goals. Attempts and only made one. The other time was on the 24th of March, 2017. He also went 1-for-13 against Atlanta. So I had a lot of people saying that he does this all the time. This is who he is. It's the second time it's happened in his career.
I love doing that to people when they throw out a generalization like that. It's just like, actually, literally, you're wrong.
I mean, it did sort of surprise me. I mean, like when you look at shooters have off nights. And I was surprised that it's only the second time. But look, again, one of those nights, he wasn't alone in missing, shots that they would normally make. So for the Bucks, probably one that they would like to forget, and I'm sure they will. They were all post-game pretty eager to move on from this, get home to the cold weather, I guess. I mean, I don't know why they'd be so keen to leave Arizona, but hey, they're back now. They'll practice tomorrow and get ready for the Pacers on Thursday night on TNT, and I would expect a pretty sharp response.
Yeah, I think so too. I have a quick Chris Middleton take.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess it is like half my podcast, so I can probably just go ahead with those. Are you familiar with the Warriors coin term, a 16-game player?
No, but is this some sort of playoff reference?
Yeah, so it was either Draymond or Iggy said, there's 82-game players and there's 16-game players, and we're more interested in 16-game players, talking about one or the other, I think, of those two. I'm pretty sure Chris Middleton is a 16-game player. Like, when Chris Middleton has a real terrible regular season night, every time, without fail, I think back to that Boston series, and I'm like, oh, no, yeah, it's okay. This doesn't really matter. Like, this is a loss to the Suns in, what, March, early March? No one cares. At the end of a 5-game road trip, 4-game West Coast trip. Like, it's really, like, it doesn't matter in the long term. I think when the games matter, when it's the postseason, I think Chris is going to be there. I think he's a 16-game player. And you know what? That's really what you need if you want to be a great team.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't heard, I don't recall that or reading that quote or, yeah, really coming across that. But I was reading something today when I was on the plane back. I was just scrolling through some stuff, and I seen that Steph Curry had a quote, and I don't have it word for word, but it was something along the lines of, well, we know that we're getting close to the playoffs, so we expect that our defensive, you know, our defensive intensity, our defensive play is going to start to ramp up now. This is what we're going to do. And it was funny just to hear him say that, because we know that, and look, the Warriors have been there and done that. They've been doing it for the last four seasons, so they can really afford to do that. But again, at this point in the season, it's tough for teams to really, you know, just maintain that absolute ruthless edge all season. And the Bucks, for the most part, incredibly, have been able to do that really well when they bounce back from losses or whatever it may be. But you know, they can have a night like that. And last night there was just a lot of things that went wrong. Again, you know, I don't think we want to make excuses for them. I mean, they just played really poorly. There's no doubt about that. But in terms of what they've been able to do consistently through 60 plus games in the season, I just feel like they've got some credits in enough credits in the bank to say, all right, you had an off night. That's fine. I mean, if this thing really stretches out over a few more games, then you start to ask some questions. But I'm definitely not hitting the early panic button right now.
No, I mean, I just don't think there's any reason to. I mean, I've been saying more and more lately that Bucks fans should have higher expectations. But I mean, if you expect them to never lose two games in a row and never lose to the same game team twice, I mean, those expectations might be a little too high.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, I don't know if this is a thing, but this is also something that I've thought through the season. I'm like, hey, maybe they want to lose back-to-back games now. And yeah, maybe it's better for them to do it now than get to the playoffs. And then they're on national TV and everyone is talking about the fact that the Bucks haven't lost back-to-back games. They lose back-to-back games in the playoffs, and all of a sudden this becomes like a monster that is all over them. So that record's out of the way now. It's done and dusted. It doesn't, you know, it really didn't mean anything. They're still the top of the East. The Raptors lost tonight to the Rockets. So the Bucks again still maintain a 2.5 game lead over Toronto, which is essentially 3.5 with the tiebreaker. So in terms of the standings, they haven't lost any ground at all from this little slip up.
No, and no one in the East is in position to catch them, certainly outside of Toronto. It's not been a banner run for most of the other Eastern Conference contenders. I mean, Philly's been okay, but the rest of them have not looked like world beaters.
No, that's for sure. And I think we've touched on it, although, you know, as we're recording this podcast, the Celtics are putting a beat down on the Warriors right now. But, you know, again, in terms of the standings, we've mentioned it before. It's, you know, it's going to be one or two for the Bucks, so you would expect that it's going to be the one seed unless, you know, a real slide occurs. But it was interesting, like, among all these games over the weekend, all of a sudden, John Horst went to work on Friday with a couple of moves that were finalized later on. They're actually finalized yesterday, both of these moves. But Pau Gasol was the interesting one. Certainly not expected. And when I was trying to think, and this is the thing with the buyout market, there's always guys that you don't expect that sort of get released out of the blue, but certainly Pau Gasol was not someone that I thought was going to be available. But, you know, clearly he wasn't happy with the situation there. Popovich has looked after him and said, hey, go somewhere else. There's a few ties there, obviously the Popovich and Budenholzer connection, and also Gasol, and I'll get into it in a little bit, but Nikola Mirotic, one of his, you know, great friends, and played in the Spanish national team together. So, look, certainly some connections there that helped push this one through. But what was your initial takes with Powell, and what are you thinking about how he's going to fit in?
Did you see any of my tweets? I looked really stupid.
Was this when it was first announced that he was
like when it was first announced that he was going to get bought out? And I was like, he's not going to the Bucks. They don't need him. They're already too deep at big guy, as we've discussed. I mean, they have, like, is our DJ and Mirotic and Ersan not going to be able to play, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it'd be a waste. I don't want him to take minutes from DJ. I'm already worried about DJ's minutes. And about halfway through those tweets, you know, I tweet a bunch of stuff and I go back and check out my notifications and whoa, he's signing with the Bucks. And I immediately get people replying and DMing like, so this was the quickest cold take on earth. And I was like, yeah, it was. I owned myself there. I admitted it. I self-tweeted the drill tweet. I'm not owned as I shrink into a corn cob. My real reaction, though, is like, I mean, it's fine if he's going to be the 15th guy who plays 2 minutes like he did against the Suns. Like, cool. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But it's hard to tell him. He might have more in the tank than I gave him credit for. I looked back at his game log, and, you know, when he did get minutes, he usually was somewhat productive for the Spurs. But I don't know, man. I do want DJ to play more because I think what he brings on defense is really valuable even when his shot isn't falling, and it's something that Ersan doesn't do because we all know Ersan's one constant NBA skill is the charge. I'm fine with it, but I'm a little worried about it at the same time. I'm certainly overthinking it, though.
Yeah, I don't think that my first take of this is that my first take was that that Powell's not going to play on this team. And that I may have, you know, sort of softened on that a little bit. And a big part of that is the fact that, and you know, I know that this is a source of some contention with Bucks fans, but Bud does love playing veterans. I mean, that's what he loves to do. We see, he plays Ersan. I know, you know, there's been some frustration from Bucks fans with that, and George Hill's another guy that he really loves to play. So, look, I think that Powell, for the most part, is going to be out there and he's going to be some real Brook Lopez insurance. And we sort of spoke about this on an earlier episode that the Bucks didn't really have a genuine center that if Lopez does get in like quick foul trouble, it's like you're going to be totally fine with putting Pau Gasol out on the floor because he is a veteran guy. He's a smart player. And I think he does still have something left in the tank. He's not going to play 20, 25 minutes anymore, and he's just not going to do that on this team. But he can space the floor. He can shoot threes. He was 0 for 2 last night. But he does fit the offense in terms of what he can bring. The question is whether Bud really wants to play him again ahead of the guy that you mentioned, DJ Wilson, who again finds himself a little bit buried in the rotation, which is a little bit disappointing to see because there were certainly times last night where the Bucks were lacking energy and the Suns looked a little bit athletic that you would have really loved to throw DJ out there. So all of a sudden there's a real logjam at that forward position with obviously Mirotić is going to be playing major minutes the whole way through. We know that. Lopez obviously is locked in the rotation. Ersan is at the moment got 2 feet in that position, and then you got Power DJ as well. So look, I think the big thing really is just the fact that Powell chose to play in Milwaukee, because I'm sure that a team like Philly could have used this guy and actually offered him more of a role. So once again, we're seeing that Milwaukee is becoming a little bit of a destination, and that's it's kind of shocking to see because Powell, when we asked him yesterday, we got the chance to catch up with him at practice, and he said that he wasn't happy with the situation in San Antonio. He wants to play. He wants to go to a place where he's going to play. I don't know, Powell. I'm like, I don't know if you are going to play all that much. But he did admit that, you know, there's been no promises made, and he understands that. But he still chose to come to Milwaukee because he believes that this was the right spot for him. And that's kind of a big deal.
No, I mean Philly, hell, the Lakers probably would have given him like 30 minutes a night at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, he definitely could have gone somewhere with more guaranteed minutes. You know, potentially somewhere that maybe could have even paid him more. Potentially. I don't know. I haven't looked at all the cap sheets for everyone. I don't think anyone has any exceptions left, but certainly a bigger role somewhere else would have been available for Powell. It is cool. And I mean, is he the only player on the roster with championship experience? I'm going to say yes without thinking about it too hard. He must be, right?
Yeah, he is. George Hill obviously was in the...
Oh, George Hill. Was in the, yeah.
But, you know, they really were lacking that that sort of, you know, real veteran experience. So I think that's going to be big. And just as a basketball fan and someone that really loves the game, it was really cool to see Pau Gasol like just hanging out with the Bucks last night. I mean, this guy's going to be a Hall of Famer. You slot him in at the end of the season for a championship run. I mean, there's just no negatives about this. And the funny thing about the whole Gasol thing is he maybe wouldn't have come if it wasn't for Mirotić. And Mirotić actually tweeted, straight after the deal, and it wasn't official, but straight after the sort of leak that Powell was looking at signing with the Bucks. And it was funny the way that happened, because I mentioned to Mirotić after the game, so this was in Friday in LA, I said, "Oh, I seen your tweet," and he sort of started laughing, and then he didn't really say much, because I think he realized that maybe he shouldn't have tweeted that, or maybe that's not what he should be doing. And I asked Gasol the same question. I said, "Oh, I seen Nico's tweet the other day," and I asked him about it, and he didn't really say much, because Powell started laughing straight away. Then he goes, "Oh yeah, yeah." He realized that he fucked up, and I was like, "Okay." And he started laughing, but it was a funny story the way he said it. So Powell texted Mirotić and said, "I need to talk to you." And Mirotić was like, "Oh," he's like, "What's wrong? Is everything okay?" And Powell's like, "I want to know about the Bucks. I'm gonna get bought out. What's the place like? What are the coaches like? Is this somewhere I want to be?" And then he said, from that moment on, Mirotić was texting him every half an hour, every hour, saying, "Hey, what are you doing? Are you coming? Like, what's happening?" And Powell was like, "Man, you just like need to leave me alone. Like, stop texting me. Like, there's no updates. I'll tell you if anything happens." And just like how excited Mirotić was to have Powell, how much he talked up the Bucks, it was incredible. And he mentioned yesterday, Mirotić, this is, mentioned that he was telling Powell that this is exactly where he wants to be. This was like winning the lottery. And I asked him, I said, you've been here for 2 weeks. I'm like, what is it about this coaching staff that makes you say that after being here for 2 weeks? I'm like, how can you possibly say that? And this is a direct quote from Mirotić yesterday on the coaches. This is on the coaching staff. He said, "The relationship they have with the players is just terrific. They all talk to the players, watching the film. It's just like family. It feels like a family. Everybody is having a great relationship with each other. Everybody is happy when somebody is having success, and the chemistry is great. This team cannot have the best record if they don't have great chemistry. The players and the coaching staff, they've been doing a great job, and we just have to try to do our job." And it's an incredible quote, and this is a big reason for why the Bucks are where they are and winning games. And when you're in the locker room, I can't say how well these guys get along and how much fun they have with each other and how much they enjoy winning and playing together. It's been incredible to watch all season. And for a guy like Mirotić to come in and speak like that says a lot for not only the team, but Bud and his staff.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, and this is something I went on the chase down a fellow Blue Wire pod talk. I mean, we didn't really talk that much Cavs, a little bit at the end, but a lot of Bucks with Carter Rodriguez. That's tired. I know how to say your name, friend. But that was one thing that he brought up, a comparison that I've been mulling on in my head, actually, is some comparisons, strong comparisons between the 2018-19 Bucks and the 2014-15 Warriors. And I think that everyone just loving being there. That at this point in the comparison, I think that's definitely, it fits in well, I would say.
Yeah, and this is something that I mentioned the other day to someone I was talking about the Bucks, and it's kind of a crazy thought, but when you think about those types of comments from Mirotić and just in general, the whole the whole way that this group has come together, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that this season may be their best shot to win a title, because I see that some people might get frustrated by me saying that, because they'll be like, "Well, look, Giannis is this age, you're gonna get these," but I understand that. But for everything to go as well as it has now, I just think that it's been too perfect so far, and they're gonna probably head into the playoffs with the best record. And I'm not saying that they can't contend in years moving forward. I'm not saying that at all. I expect that this team is going to be a contender in the East for many years. But this may be, with everything that's happened and the way it's all come together, their best shot to win a championship may be this season. And you may look back on that in 5-6 years and think that this season was a missed opportunity if you don't get that. I feel like they understand that. I feel like they're not thinking about getting to the second round when you talk to them. They have the confidence to believe that they can win the whole damn thing. And, you know, that's what's exciting about watching this team and following this group, because that's where their goal is. Their goal is to win a title, and they understand that as well, that you don't know what's going to happen in the future. This may be the best shot.
I would say this may be the highest ceiling for individual play on a Bucks team. The only reason I sort of go specific with that caveat is, like, KD going from being on the Warriors to being on a different team changes a whole lot in terms of who can actually win. Yeah. And I just think, like, him not being there, even if the Bucks got marginally worse, like, if KD is not on the Warriors next year, they're worse by a noticeable measure, especially with the rest of the core aging. And I just think everything feels more wide open after that. But I agree. I'm not trying to disagree. I'm really just being pedantic at this point.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I'm not even really thinking about what other teams are doing when I say that. I'm thinking about what can happen with the Bucks, and you know, do they always get along this well? Is everyone always this happy? Is everyone always this unselfish? You know, there's just the dynamic can change over time, and you know, for the way everything's come together right now, there's just really nothing to complain about when you look in that locker room. Everyone's happy, everyone's looking out for each other, and everyone's enjoying each other's success, and that's big when you're trying to contend and go through the grind of the playoffs.
That's huge. I mean, going like the grind, going for the playoffs, especially years and years in a row, it can be stressful. Life can be stressful too. Getting life insurance shouldn't be stressful, Kane. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. Just like the Bucks drama situation this year, there is none. It's uncomplicated. At GetEthos.com, there are no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million. No hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives like Nikola Mirotic. It won't be like a you're Pau Gasol. These representatives are not like Nikola Mirotic. They're not even there. They're not going to text you every hour. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, and you can rest assured knowing you've taken steps to protect your family. And in most cases with Ethos, you can have that peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day with no hidden fees. I could go for a cup of coffee right now. Having life insurance can free you from stress. Getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit your complete application in minutes. Just go to GetEthos.com. That's ETHOS, GetEthos.com. One more time, that's GetEthos.com.
Wow, that was another spectacular ad read. So just for the listeners, I never really know. So, Ty, he does such a great job of it. So I let him roll with that. And I never know when he's going to, you know, cut to the ad read. And again, you know, I was wondering, like, we're 32 minutes in here. I'm like, maybe he forgot. I shouldn't just disrespect him like that. That was spectacular. But
my favorite is you always make the same like groan when I start to do it, and that's my favorite part of the whole podcast.
Because as soon as I hear the word, I'm just like, I know what he's doing. This is incredible. So the other, you know, while we'll get back to the Bucks, and while we are talking about moves that they made, the other one was Eric Bledsoe, earned himself a little bit of cash on the weekend. 4 years, $70 million. What was your first take on that, and where do you sit on the Bledsoe extension?
So I liked it right away. I thought it was good right away. I think it's under market a little bit for him, and I can explain why in a little later. And then when I found out the last year is only partially guaranteed, I started to really like it. The one negative that jumped, I mean, there's always the caveat, like, well, if he regresses or doesn't play this well or gets hurt, obviously it's not a good deal. Yeah, that's pretty implied. And I don't expect him to play this good for the entire deal, but I mean, if you get two more good years out of him and then one okay year, by then you're to that last guaranteed year. So that's fine. It is what it is at that point. The other sort of negative or con or whatever to this happening right now is, I mean, all those scenarios I presented and I've looked at where, you know, they could keep Middleton's cap hold and Brogdon's and open up 30 plus million in room. I mean, that's all done now. That's all over. I mean, now if you factor in Bledsoe's contract, let's say keep everything else about that scenario the same, factor in Bledsoe's deal for, what is it, like 17-ish million, I think, a year? In the first year, at least? I don't know.
I think it's actually – I did have it up. I think it's actually 15.
Oh, it's 15 and it goes up. Okay. So 15.
So 15.62, 16.8, 18.1, and then 19.3 in the fourth year with obviously just the 3.9 is guaranteed there. So, you know, the fourth year is up in the air. But, 15, 16, then 18.
Yeah, I mean, the 18 year is tough, but to get Bledsoe for only $54 million guaranteed is not that bad. I'm interested to hear your take, but so you already factor that money away, and then even if you like got rid of Chris's cap hold, you'd have like less than $30 million to play with, which is not enough for a max free agent. So it pretty much feels now like the move is going to be to keep the core, which is an interesting decision to make at this point in all of this.
Yeah, so I look, it's there was so many I had so many things going through my head with this, right? Because first of all, the dollar amount is fine. Like, it is. I mean, there was certainly some way in my head that I could see that Bledsoe would get more or
I want to let you finish just to cut in real quickly. I mean, if you look at the free agents this summer, the only two that are better than him that are going to be unrestricted are Kemba and Kyrie. And if you assume Kemba stays for that Supermax in Charlotte, which after not forcing his way out, he certainly is going to do that. And Kyrie is either going to go to like the Knicks, the Lakers, or stay in Boston. Those feel like the only three real, maybe like the Clippers, but he's not widely available to like any team. So then you're looking at like 25 teams in the league. Their best possible unrestricted free agent point guard would have been Eric Bledsoe. So I could certainly see, given that scenario, him getting paid.
Yeah, I could too. But if that was the case, why did he sign now? Because I have to believe that Rich Paul, I have to believe that he knew that the market wasn't there. Because if not, why is Bledsoe signing this deal now? And you can say, well, Bledsoe just wanted to be in Milwaukee, and that's fine. But if the difference, if someone was going to pay him over $20 million, does he want to be in Milwaukee that bad? I'm not so sure. And my feeling is that, and this is, and look, you can disagree or agree with this, but if Bledsoe signs now for a deal that's essentially around 17.5, you know, on average per year, what would happen if that was his market and the way that they believed was that he was only going to get a little bit more money than that? So they're saying, okay, look, it's roughly around here, but you can sign long-term in Milwaukee. A great situation for you. You play with Giannis, play with Middleton, obviously guys that he's super close with, you know, under Bud. He knows the system. You can sign for 17.5 in Milwaukee right now. And he does that. But what happens if that's his market and he flops in the playoffs again? Because all of a sudden, if his market wasn't that high in the first place, and then he has another playoffs like he did last year, I don't know if anyone's paying him even that money. So I just feel like the fact that this deal got done so early, I think part of it is Bledsoe wanting to be in Milwaukee, but I also think it's an indication of where his market was. And by him signing this now, he definitely ensures that he doesn't lose any more money in the playoffs if things don't go well. So, you know, and conversely, and trust me, look if he plays the way he's played all this season and has a monster playoffs, then it's the complete opposite. The 17.5 turns into a bargain. But I just think there's so many interesting things about this deal and why it got done now. It was a surprise to everyone, I believe.
Yeah, I was certainly surprised. I mean, listen, it's not gonna go entirely one way ever when a deal like this gets done. I mean, you only come to an agreement early, an extension, if both parties have something to gain. So clearly, you described it well. I mean, there's a chance his playoffs are bad. There's a chance his playoffs are good. And the markets, you never know we've been surprised often, almost always, in what players get paid and what trade values are. I mean, I heard Terry Rozier might get $15 million a year, which to me is kind of crazy. But then again, that's from the Suns. I don't think the Suns would sign Eric Bledsoe back. But I feel like my prevailing thing is I'm pretty fine with it. I mean, the more I looked at it, I didn't really see any flashy free agents that they could realistically go get and pair with this core this summer. Didn't really feel like any of them had like any prior history with the Bucks or any even maybe necessarily great fits that would be affordable. So at that point, you know, why not lock in the good feelings? I'm sure Bledsoe feels great now that he was able to lock this deal in. I mean, that's the goal for a lot of guys, right? You get two big deals. This is Bledsoe's second big deal, so that's great for him. And he might still even get one more. I mean, he's not that old. He's 29, I think. So I'm fine with it. I like it. You know, I tweeted a meme, which is not something I do all the time, but I tweeted a meme like a week ago that it was like the guy looking at a different girl while he's with his girlfriend, and the different girl was keeping the Bucks players on the team, and the girlfriend was chasing free agents, and the guy was Bucks fans, and that's kind of how I've started to feel. I would not be against it unless the playoffs are terrible, which again we won't know now before this Bledsoe deal is signed. But unless the playoffs are awful, I'm pretty with keeping this core together.
Yeah, and I think we've all sort of thought that some of the other decisions are going to be based upon what happens in the playoffs and the success they have. So we're still going to see that. The interesting thing for mine, you know, in how this relates to another player in the Bucks roster, is Malcolm Brogdon, because, I mean, there's no way that you can pay Brogdon more than Bledsoe. I mean, you just can't do that. He's just not as good. Bledsoe is a better player than Malcolm Brogdon, and that's fine. Like, Brogdon's done some incredible things, and again, fits the system really well. We know that he's been super efficient, you know, playing that sort of that second guard and doing some ball handling, doing some catch and shoot stuff. He's been unbelievable, but the Bucks aren't going to pay Brogdon more than Bledsoe. So I've wondered all year about Brogdon's market. Is a team going to pay him like a second option and they want to pay him 18, 19, 20 million? I'm not so sure that they will. But I just think now that deal has really set the market for Brogdon of where Milwaukee's going to go. And I would be surprised to see Milwaukee go, you know, any higher than 14, 15. And that's just my opinion. I don't know anything about that. I was, you know, talking with someone, not with the Bucks. Not related to the Bucks or the franchise, but someone in the league who believed that Brogdon was not, there's no chance, there's absolutely zero chance that he will get, you know, even money close to Bledsoe. So that market's going to be interesting. But that was one of the first things I thought with the Bledsoe deal, is that it sort of set a bar for where the Bucks might go with Brogdon. So that's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think one final note on contracts here and maybe a little bit of optimism for Bucks fans is, you know, these core players now have sort of a history of agreeing to, I mean, in two cases, well below what ended up being market value. In one case with Bledsoe, to be seen. But, I mean, now we've got Bledsoe, Giannis, and Middleton, all who have, you know, negotiated and accepted new or extended contracts with the Bucks without really even scoping out the market for, I mean, obviously agents always make calls and determinations and whatever else, but I mean, like, Middleton's deal was like the first done in free agency. Giannis's extension was very non-dramatic, and both of those players certainly left money on the table. And now Bledsoe, it remains to be seen. He's a little older, but, you know, he didn't hold out for the most money. He didn't, you know, enter some messy free agent situation, as much as Rich Paul might love those. He just signed and signed up. So I think there's something there, and I'm not saying guys are going to take pay cuts. I'm not saying anything else. It's just something interesting to note. The Bucks front office has done well in keeping guys around that it wants to keep. You know, no one has even really tried to look around and leave at this point. I mean, like Thon, but I mean like major, like Giannis, Middleton, Bledsoe players. I think it's an encouraging thing for your front office to be good at doing that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, John Horst has been, he's been working some deals this year, man. He has been on fire. Everything he's done, from, you know, creating some cap room, signing guys, getting guys in the buyout market, making the right decision with Jabari. I mean, he really has hardly taken a step wrong this year, picking up the DJ Wilson option that was, you know, heavily criticized at the time. So, look, John Horst, man, he's been on fire this year. And the only thing I'll touch on in terms of players taking discounts, so the only thing I will say is that it's not often that you get a player to take a discount twice. So
yeah, that's true.
When you look at Giannis and Middleton, I think that, you know, those guys, and you could debate, I'm not putting them in the same category in terms of talent, but I wouldn't be expecting any favors from either of them two when the time comes, which obviously for Middleton is only a couple of months away.
Correct. That's a good point. Certainly, I think Giannis for sure is going to get whatever the most he can possibly get on his next deal without any sort of hesitation. Unless, yeah, I mean, yeah, Giannis might be like, no, it's fine. I'll actually take less, which I don't expect that. That wouldn't be good or bad. That's just something that, I mean, Giannis might do. You never know with Giannis, but no, I certainly think that those two have earned a whole lot of money.
Yeah, with that question. And, I know you did have some herd stuff.
It's going to have to wait.
Yeah, we'll try and get another pot in. Maybe Friday might work after the Pacers game. But we have run out a little bit of time here. But the Bucks, you know, facing, I don't know if you call it adversity, but first time they've lost back-to-back games. So they're going to try to avoid the disastrous three-game losing streak when they return to Fiserv to take on the Pacers on Thursday night. It's going to be on TNT. The Bucks lead the season series 2-1. So they'll be looking for a 3-1 series victory over the division rivals. But another national TV game, and you know, the Bucks perhaps might be feeling a little bit of pressure for the first time this year.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be fascinating to see how they respond to that early, much less significant than the playoffs later coming test. That was a horrible sentence.
Well, I mean, you got through it. But we will leave it there. We'll be back after that Pacers game. But this is going to be, we're going to put a wrap on episode 5 of the Eurostep. So we'll be back in a couple of days and hopefully be discussing the Bucks getting back on track with a win against the Pacers.
That is the goal. Thank you, Kane, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.